A few years back, I spoke with Michael Brusovsky, an Australian who founded in 2002 a children's education and training centre in Vietnam for impoverished kids and families. Based in Hanoi, one of the aims of the Blue Dragon Children's Foundation was to stop the abduction and trafficking of children in and out of Vietnam. Now, there's a little connection between Hanoi and Niall in Wellington. Later this month, there'll be a book fair at the Niall Town Hall, and the proceeds will go to Michael's Blue Dragon Foundation. I know this because one of the organisers got in touch with us, and that seemed like a good reason to get in touch with Michael Brusovsky again, on the line from Vietnam. Kia ora, Michael. Welcome back to Nights.
It's lovely to be talking to you again, Brian. It's been a while.
It has. It's been about 10 years, hasn't it? Something like that?
I think 12, yeah.
Yeah? That long. Michael.
That long.
It's, in some ways, that's great. In some ways, it's sad because it means there's still children being trafficked. You still have to do that work.
Unfortunately, you're right. There's always lots to do. But I could spend the next 4 hours talking to you, Brian, about all the success stories we've had along the way. So there's good in there as well.
I remember you talking about the work you were doing, which sometimes involved tracing children across the border into factories in China. Difficult and dangerous work. Are you still doing that?
Yeah. Look, over the years, it's really changed and evolved. We're now rescuing kids and women from China, also from Myanmar, being trafficked into brothels and forced marriages. As well as boys and men trafficked for labor. So, you know, there's a lot to do, lots of problems there. And COVID certainly hasn't helped, that's for sure.
Has it got easier to do what you do? Do you have more support now from the authorities in China and Vietnam?
Yeah, one of the things that's about our work that's really encouraging is that we're really not on our own. The authorities in China and Vietnam, they really are concerned about this problem and they do want it to stop. And as you've just been saying, all the way over in Ngaio and throughout New Zealand, there's support for these kids as well. So there is support to end this problem. And over the years, we've worked out how to do it. We've now rescued more than 1,000 people from trafficking. And you know, that's a lot of lives saved. And we're talking about how could we end this problem, human trafficking, once and for all. So we've got our eyes on a pretty big picture right now, Brian.
That big picture then what involves looking at the sorts of things that make children vulnerable to being abducted or trafficked in the first place?
Exactly. We can identify what puts young people at risk. And, you know, it's things like dropping out of school early. It's things like family members traveling away to work because they don't have a job opportunity at home. It's things like a lack of understanding among communities about the risks of strangers coming to town and inviting you to travel with them. So they are things that we can address. And while there might always be human trafficking in our world, I really do believe that the situation can be a lot better than it is.
What's changed in the way you work since we last spoke 12 years ago?
How long have we got, Brian?
We've got a few minutes.
Look, we have a much greater reach now. We've been able to really get into communities, especially in these really remote rural areas in the deep north of Vietnam, close to China, and also in communities all around Vietnam. And we've gotten to know people. We've gotten to know different communities. You know, in a country of 100 million people, Vietnam has about 13 million people who belong to what we call ethnic minority groups. And they're the most vulnerable to being trafficked. So over these years, Blue Dragon has really gotten to understand what are the dynamics that make some of these ethnic groups more vulnerable than others? What would it take to keep kids in school and to keep mums at home so that they don't have to take risky take a chance for a risky job somewhere far away. So we've deepened our knowledge and broadened our network and gained a lot of credibility over these years. We've been able to conduct research that you can download it from our website. So it's no longer just that we're responding to calls for help. We are certainly still doing that. Someone calls, we go and we rescue them. But we're now also taking, that step out in front of the problem, getting out there before the problem happens and trying to prevent it. So that's been the key development in our work over these years.
Are the traffickers changing the way they work as well in response to that?
Yeah, all the time. And this is a common theme in every country, that as soon as the law catches up with human traffickers, they switch around how they work. But that's okay, because we can switch as well. So, for example, until very recently, nearly all of the people we were rescuing were girls and women trafficked into China. And they were being taken there to be sold as brides against their will. But with COVID, when that became a lot harder to get people across the border into China, the traffickers started taking people into Myanmar, into the northern state of Myanmar. Now we're finding young people, boys and men as well, are being taken to Cambodia. So it's kind of a fluid ground, this human trafficking. Nothing stays the same for very long. And that really influences the way we work. We have to be ready to shift at a moment's notice. But the underlying principle that we need to keep kids and families safe, that doesn't change. No matter what the traffickers do, that's the key.
Where's the demand come from, and has that changed? In other words, the demand for the labour, the demand for the slave labour, basically.
Yeah, well, COVID has created a lot of demand. People are doing it tough. People throughout Vietnam, have lost jobs, especially in hospitality and tourism. And so they're desperate for work. And basically, traffickers are taking advantage of that, seeing opportunities for free labor. We hear stories of people being trafficked into online gambling factories, basically. So it's really about exploitation. In China and Myanmar, the issue is largely around a demand for women and girls because of a shortage of women in China. And most people will know that's been caused by a one-child policy, which skewed the population of China to being more men than women. That one-child policy has ended, but it will take many years for a more balanced population. So the problem persists.
Are the women and girls likely to be the victims of sex crime when they're trafficked?
Yeah. So if they're being trafficked into China, they're being sold to men who basically want them to have a baby. And if they're being trafficked to Myanmar, it's into brothels. And these are pretty brutal places where women are held against their will. And, I mean, what happens there is terrifying. I'm holding back from sharing because the stories are just so horrible.
No, you don't have to elaborate, really. It's rape on a horrific scale by the sounds of things.
Yeah.
Do the traffickers target families that are vulnerable or individuals?
They're targeting individuals. They especially look for girls and women who maybe have dropped out of school early, who are not socially well connected. So if they go missing for a few months, there might not be a whole lot of people who will raise an alarm or who will know what to do. And especially people who are a little bit desperate. Now, that could be someone who they've lost their job, they've got a family member in hospital, or someone in the family has a disability. there's usually a couple of things together that make somebody very vulnerable. And the traffickers, you know, they have expertise in identifying those vulnerabilities and offering hope. So you see, it's the trafficking is really about the traffickers promising something that their victim needs. That could be a relationship, you know, come with me and you know, let's have a great life together. Or it could be a job, you know, especially at the moment, especially in this post-COVID environment where people are desperate to work. So, yeah, that preying on vulnerability, that's how this trafficking takes place.
So, Michael, as you pointed out, it's going to be a lot easier to stop that before the traffickers get to the individuals who are vulnerable, because once they're abducted, it's much harder work to get them back. So what are you doing? Are you in the business of offering vulnerable people a bit more hope than the traffickers can? Tangible stuff.
Yes. Well, we can identify the areas of the country that are most vulnerable. So we're working in these select locations. And just as there's a cluster of problems that create the vulnerability, we go in with a cluster of activities. So we support kids to go to school. And when kids drop out of school, we go and see their family and see if we can get them back. And most of the time it's successful. We'll train government officials so that they know what to look for. When, you know, when traffickers come to town or when somebody goes missing, they know what to do. We work with the court system to make sure that traffickers get sentenced properly so that people can see this is what happens if you traffic somebody. And a key part of it is helping families and especially women to develop their income. Now, that could mean helping someone get training and get a job. But in rural areas, it often means helping a family buy a cow or a pig or helping them to grow corn so that they have their own income. And then when a trafficker comes along and says, do you want to come with me and I'll give you a high-paying job, the woman can say, no, I'm right. I've got my cow. It can really be as simple as that.
One of the things I noticed, Michael, on your website was the, which I can't remember the last time I checked, although it was a while ago, was the, there was a bit of football on there, a bit of sport. Now, what role does that play?
So everything we've been talking about so far is pretty serious. But in the end, kids are kids. They love to play. They love to get out there and kick a ball around or go running or learn to swim. So we provide those opportunities as well. Ever since we began, you know, nearly 20 years ago as a bunch of volunteers meeting street kids in Hanoi, we've always played football because it's meeting the kids on their turf. You know, we like to think that we're the people with the answers and the kids should come to us and we'll help them. But actually, it's really helpful to get out there where the kids are. You know, into their neighbourhood, where they're familiar with the rules of the game, and just let them be kids. You know, for all of the anti-trafficking work that we do, getting kids to school, we've got more than 100 young people in university right now. We still, through all of it, we just want kids to have a chance to live their life, and football is part of that.
Your work is based in Hanoi, but you've mentioned other countries where trafficking is taking place in your area, your part of the world, Myanmar and Cambodia. But is this an issue that really exists in pretty much every part of the world where there is a big disparity between the rich and the poor, which leaves the poor extremely vulnerable?
Yeah, this is a global problem. And it affects different countries in different ways. What we're doing through our work, we can't save everyone. So we're trying to learn what are the underlying principles that that end trafficking, that keep people safe. And what we're planning is that over the coming years, we're going to be increasingly able to share our findings with a global audience, to say, these are the things that when you do them, they end trafficking. And we believe that they will, that what we find, that what we do will be relevant, certainly around our region, around Southeast Asia, and potentially relevant in other countries as well, in other parts of the world. And so we are hoping to have a bigger impact on human trafficking. As I say, we can't help everyone, but we believe that the work that we'll do might provide some answers to others who are fighting human trafficking.
Michael, it's been lovely talking with you again. How long have you been living in Hanoi now? Do you think you ever will go back to Australia?
I've been in Hanoi for 20 years now. I arrived in March 2002. I love getting to back to Australia, and I pop over to New Zealand whenever I can as well. But Vietnam is home. I love it. I love the dynamic country that it is. You know, every time I go away, when I come back, something's changed. There's a new road. There's a new city. You know, it's a country on the move, and I love that. It has its challenges, of course, but I see it as a country where you can do a bit of work, you can do some good, and yield great results. So I love it. I don't have any plan to leave there, Brian.
Michael, thank you so much for your time this evening.
No, thank you, and I appreciate that you've been a supporter of the book fair that's coming up. So hopefully we'll get a few people out there on the last weekend of this month.
That's right. Thank you, Michael. Have a good
Thanks,
day.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you very much.
That's Michael Brasovsky, who is the founder of the Blue Dragon Children's Foundation, taking on trafficking, human trafficking, in North Vietnam, in Hanoi, in Vietnam. And yes, there's a book fair on at the Nile Town Hall on Saturday the 28th of May. In Wellington, all proceeds going to the foundation. In fact, I think it's on this Sunday as well.